Right now, we're looking back at the year in science with Discover Magazine. Last week, we talked to editor Bill Andrews about all of the astronomy news from 2016, including the detection of gravitational waves.
A lot of big science stories happened here on Earth in the last year, too, like the discovery of a catastrophic earthquake threat to Bangladesh, the impact of Brexit on the science world, and why dogs bite. Gemma Tarlak joins us now. She's a senior editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Gemma, welcome back.
Hello, my fellow science-loving friends. How are you?
Doing pretty well, thanks. Yeah. Well, here we are at the end of the year, and we've covered a lot with you, Gemma, but it turns out we haven't covered everything, and we're going to be looking at some of those top stories today. And I want to start with the earthquake threat to Bangladesh. What is the story there?
Yeah, this is scientifically a very interesting story, but it also has some very serious potential consequences for millions of people. And we all know Bangladesh is one of the most, actually the most densely populated country on the planet. And we've known for years that there was a fault line running underneath it. Well, this new research found that we now know more about the fault line, and sorry, folks, it's not good news. The worst earthquakes we have in the world, like, for example, the 2011 quake in Japan, those occur in subduction zones. And subduction zones, until now, were all under oceanic crust. So there was really no worry about a subduction zone under land. But they have found that this fault line that runs under Bangladesh, it is actually a subduction zone, and it's just covered with like 12 miles of sediment. And so you've got a very serious earthquake hazard on top of with 12 miles of sediment on top of it, 12 miles thick, and you know, sediment can liquefy during a seismic event, which makes it even more dangerous than other types of ground. And on top of that, you've got not only a densely populated nation, but a very poor nation where the infrastructure for buildings is just really not what it should be in a seismically active zone. So they are now very concerned, and pressure is building on this fault line, that when the pressure gets too much and an earthquake occurs, it's going to be catastrophic. So that's the bad news. But nobody panic, because the good news is we know about it now. And the researchers involved in this project, they're collecting more data to learn a little bit more about the fault. And they're also kind of banging the drum to say, hey, we need to deal with this now. We need to look at infrastructure and building codes and other ways of protecting all the people who are now at risk.
Yeah, Gemma, as I to a limited extent understand earthquakes, it's very hard to say an earthquake will happen on this day at this time. But it is possible to look at earthquake risk and say this is an area where you're at risk of a bad earthquake. So this kind of information helps us know where we need to do something, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it would be great if we could say the quake is going to be in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years, or it's not going to be for a century. We can't really do that, but we can tell a couple things. For example, they do know that pressure is building, which means that we are closer rather than further away. You know, it's an active zone and pressure is building. So that's a problem. And we can also tell a little bit by what is between the fault itself and the surface of the earth. And in this case, it is the sediment, which does have a tendency to liquefy, which makes it much worse than granite or a lot of other grounds out there or rocks out there. So it's not looking good in that respect, but again, we know about it now, so we can start taking action and be ready for it.
So, Gemma, trying to understand a little bit about what's happening. So what's happening, if I understand it, is there's one plate that's not passing smoothly over or under another, but it's kind of jamming right into it?
Yeah, well, you know, there are a couple different kinds of fault lines which occur where at the edges of plates, the plates that cover our planet and kind of slip and slide around. And usually the ones under land are called strike-slip fault lines. And basically they kind of slide past each other on the same plane, if you want to think about it, kind of like, you know, sliding on by. But the subduction zone is where one plate is shoving another beneath it. And that's why the earthquakes there are so much more dangerous, because it's kind of if you want to think of it as a much more violent act, you're not kind of sliding by each other, but just shoving one plate below the other.
Let's move on to one of the other top stories of 2016, and one that you've pointed out is the creation of the Ross Sea Marine Protected Area. What's that?
Yeah, I love the story for so many reasons. One is it is a very positive environmental story. So it's one of those where, you know, you can get the pom-poms out and say, yay, humans. And in this case, it's an unprecedented agreement. It took them more than 6 years to sort out. But they have created the world's largest marine protected area. It's big. It's twice as big. Actually, it's more than twice as big as Texas. And it is the first major reserve in non-territorial waters outside the jurisdiction of any nation. You know, other reserves, like the one with the impossibly long name that President Obama created last year in Hawaii, that is in U.S. waters, so the U.S. has jurisdiction over it. But in this case, the Ross Sea Marine Protected Area is in Antarctica, and it is in non-territorial waters. So it was a question of getting many different nations together to agree to protect this area, where any fishing of any kind is prohibited in more than 70% of the area. And in that remaining 30%, the only kind of fishing allowed is for very specific, narrowly defined scientific research.
Why this particular area, Gemma? What's special about it?
Well, there are a couple things that are really special about it. And one is it's considered one of, if not the most pristine marine ecosystem left on the planet. And, I mean, that's important. It's an area where you find very little pollutants, very little commercial activity, et cetera. But the other reason is, if you want to think of Antarctica at the bottom of the planet or the South Pole area, and around Antarctica is this current, and it's just kind of whipping around the continent of Antarctica, bringing very cold waters, and then it kind of shoots up to reach all the other waters on Earth. It's kind of the center. And you know, one of the people I talked to for this story said it's kind of the heart of the planet. And the Southern Ocean pushes, in as it's circling Antarctica and then shooting northward, it's actually pushing all this really nutrient-dense cold water. And you could think of it as feeding the planet in some respects, or at least feeding other marine environments. So it's really important to protect it because it is really the heart of marine ecosystems around the planet.
Talking to Gemma Tarlak from Discover Magazine, looking at some of the most interesting stories from the world of science in 2016. And Gemma, one on the list, a political story, really, Brexit and how that's going to affect scientific research. What will change?
Well, you know, we can't say for sure because they are still working out all the Brexit details. But in general, scientists in Europe are very unhappy about what Brexit has the potential to do. And that's because, you know, with the EU's open borders, scientists are much freer to collaborate. And also there's a lot of funding for science that takes place through the European Union right now. And just for example, between 2007 and 2013, Britain received about $3.8 billion more than it contributed to funding for EU research and innovation. So basically, they got more out of the deal than they put into it when it comes to scientific research. They also were participating in, you know, the Large Hadron Collider and European Space Agency, all these huge, very crucial scientific research projects. And now their participation and collaboration is in jeopardy. Because if Britain closes the borders, if you want to think of it that way, they're going to really just drop a divider down between scientists of continental Europe and the UK, which could be very unfortunate, have a lot of very terrible consequences, not for only individual careers, but also for very big projects.
And it sounds like there's some potential for this kind of collaboration to keep going. What are some of the possibilities that are hoped for, at least for scientists in the UK?
Well, you know, one of the things, there are thousands of foreign researchers working in the UK, and current scientists are hoping that they might get grandfathered in because, you know, one of the things about Brexit is to really restrict immigration in the United Kingdom. So they're hoping that these scientists who are making very valuable contributions and are already living in the United Kingdom may get grandfathered in and excused from any restrictions. It's possible that the United Kingdom may really kick up the levels of funding for its own scientists, but it's a huge question mark at this point. And I have to admit, the scientists who have spoken to our writer on this topic are not optimistic. It's a scary time for them.
Now, it's an exciting time for finding new animal species around the world, and you have a roundup of a bunch of them in your top 100 list. What are some of the most exciting new species we've discovered this year?
Oh, there are a ton of them, and there's some really cool ones. We've got some ants with these insane spines on their back that are actually named for dragons on Game of Thrones, which is cool. We have a giant rat, yes, a rodent of unusual size. It's larger than your average subway rat, but I have to say my favorite, because of its backstory, is Chilobothrys argentum, and that is this gorgeous silver snake. It lives on a single kind of, it's not even an island, it's like an island bank in the Caribbean, and they were trying to collect species of it, but it's pretty rare, so they were, you know, collecting specimens and having a hard time of it, and the researchers were camping on the island while they were trying to get their hands on these specimens, and one of the snakes crawled across the face of the researcher as he was sleeping. That's how it became a specimen, my friends.
Oh, no. Wow. So an interesting time for discovering new species, for sure. And there's another species that we know quite a lot about, but not everything, dogs. Gemma, there's some dog news about why they bite.
Yeah, this is a really interesting story. It's the first time they've been able to pinpoint genetically specific areas, specific clusters in the DNA that predispose a dog towards different types of aggression, either aggression towards strangers and strange dogs, or aggression towards the dog's owner and other dogs in the household. And this is really the first step towards understanding aggression in dogs on a genetic level and also to be able to treat it. And they're hoping, once they identify these specific genetic variations in dogs and develop treatments, those same treatments might work on humans who have, you know, a variety of issues that are expressed as aggression.
Well, that's getting weird then. So we're going to be able to find the genetic basis of aggression in humans and change that? I mean, does that take away, you know, professional hockey then?
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting because the aggression they identified was all fear-based aggression. Mm. And, you know, a lot of times, for example, and this is very speculative, so I don't want people to go out and start calling their doctors about it, but, you know, with PTSD, for example, a lot of times a specific sound or whatever triggers the person, and they're very fearful, and they act very aggressively. If, let's say, this research, if they find out that that particular kind of aggression has the same genetic genetic cause that's contributing to how the person acts, they might be able to treat it. This is all super preliminary, and I don't want anyone to think that we are even, you know, 5 years away from figuring it out, but it was just very cool to be able to see it in dogs and see it very clearly, which has really given the scientists something to work on in the next stage of the research.
Interesting. Gemma, thanks for bringing us up to date on all those stories. That's Gemma Tarlak, senior editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. She joined us with a look back at some of the most interesting science stories of 2016.